نلقاكم على الأول بروغرام في دين السيرية جديدة سيرية جديدة يسمى سخة دينية لسفيدة اللي هات المطول دان السايف لستاجون فين نتاما اللي سيركولكم الأوبورتونيتا تستريهو شفتيت و تهدو شفتيت فغانسي نتاما وكل يكون أوبورتونيتا بيش تكمبلو السيقو دان البروغرام اللي ناتوالمنت دايم يكولو الريبيت تياو الريبيت تياو اللي تكون السبت في لودو والورا نħu l-opportunità u koll nsellem dawk li qed iseguna s-sibt fir-repeat ta' dan il-programm. Irrid nfakkarkom ukoll li dan huwa programm li jkun bħal dejjem fuq il-website tagħna ftit momentu wara ftit ħin wara li jkun Jim Xandar ikun available fuq il-website tagħna Campus FM radio biex intkom tkunu tistgħu tarġgħu seguh fil-kumdita ta' dakom permezz tal-computers tagħkom. Jina f'din l-iskeda kif għatilkom ħadd din l-isfida li x'inħoss li fil-waqt li huwa żmien fejn aħna nistrieħu huwa wkoll żmien fejn tajjeb illi dak li jkun wkoll jirrifletti fuq il-ħajja tiegħu. Ħafna drabi aħna forsi bil-ritmu li nkunu għaddejjin bih ma nqisux biżejjed illi dak li qed nagħmel illum f'dan il-mument huwa se jkollu effett fil-futur. Illum se nitratta f'dal-ewwel programm din is-serje se nitratta t-tema tal-breast cancer. Huwa hija tema li dal-aħħar żmien f'dawn l-aħħar snin, dawn l-aħħar ftit snin irid ngħid, tajna importanza kbira fil-medja kien hemm kampanji kbar fuq din it-tema, saru diversi programmi, diversi skedi ta' diskussjonijiet għaliex dejjem inħass kemm huwa importanti li verament nibdew nirriflettu fuq sitwazzjoni ta' ħafna nies li teffettuhom din il-kondizzjoni partikolari. Biex niddiskuti dan, miegħi għandi l-żewġ kollegi, għandi l-Mr. Karwana Dingli li huwa kirurgu u jmexxi l-unit il-Breast Clinic, u għandi l-Miss Helen Muscat li hija chairperson tal-ABCF, Action for Breast Cancer Foundation, kif ukoll hija by profession nurse u għandha kellha esperjenza diretta ta' din il-kondizzjoni pawmana. Jina biex nagħmel din diskussjoni se nkun qiegħed nuża l-Ingliż nitlobkom tiskużawna imma Helen hija il-background tagħha huwa li jirrikjedi li nitkellmu bl-Ingliż allura se nkunu qegħdin nagħmlu hekk. Jina nirringrazzjawkom, I would like to thank you for joining me in this first program, in this first edition of this new series Saha. Can you give me a bit of an overview, Mr. Gowan Dingley, what the situation is when we talk about breast cancer? What are we talking about here? First of all, what is the condition, and obviously in a nutshell, and the impact of this condition and how it affects our local population?
First of all, thank you for inviting us both here today, and congratulations on your idea for this series, and we're very honored to be here on the first program. Breast cancer is one of the cancers. Unfortunately, when we use the word cancer, we use it for a lot of different diseases which behave in different ways, and each one is quite specific. Breast cancer affects mostly women, though it does sometimes even affect men. It does affect men. About one out of every 100 women that get breast cancer, there'll be one man. That's about 1%. And this usually starts off as a lump in the breast. It's sometimes felt by the patient, but sometimes it's seen on a mammogram, which is done for someone, not specifically because there's a lump which is palpable. And the nature of the disease is that this lump can grow in within the breast, and sometimes also it can spread to other parts of the body. So it is quite important to try and treat it at an early stage, when it is relatively small, because then the treatment is going to be more effective and is going to be simpler. To put it into the context of the health situation in Malta, breast cancer is the commonest single cancer in Malta. There are about 300 cases a year.
New cases.
New cases every year, more or less. One woman will get breast cancer, one every day, more or less, in Malta. And the incidence is increasing. So if you see the statistics over the last 20 years, there are more and more women that are getting the disease. One of the reasons, well, there are probably two main reasons. One is that the population is increasing. The population of Malta increases by about 1% every year. And also the age of the population is increasing because people are living longer.
And but isn't our quality of life improving as well? Does that
the quality is improving.
Factor into the
and in fact, in spite of the fact that there are more cases every year, I'm very pleased to state that the deaths, mortality from the disease is decreasing steadily from year to year. So even when you correct for the amount of patients that are presenting, so that's very good news. This is one of the tumors which is most amenable to treatment, which is most treatable. And so it is important to get that early stage because the treatment, as I said, can be more effective.
Okay, Helen, your the interest, the passion for this particular area.
That came from, well, my childhood actually, because I grew up in a background in the UK where my father was an Anglican priest, and he always encouraged us as children to offer our care to somebody that was in need. And I often gravitated to helping women that had breast cancer, and that this is from a very young age. I didn't really know anything about the condition when I was younger, but as I grew up and I was meeting different people, I tended to help these women just by being around and being cheerful and, you know, doing whatever to make their lives a bit better. But at that time, obviously, a lot of these women were still dying, not like today, as Gordon is quite rightly stating. So, and then as a nurse, I saw that a lot of cancer patients in general were being treated in busy surgical wards, especially when they were very ill. And as I was working as a staff nurse on surgical units in the UK and in Malta, because when I first came to live in Malta, I had some quite serious complications with my kidneys, and I was in and out of hospital for major surgery. And again, on the main surgical wards, I saw a lot of patients with cancer dying from cancer, and in a setting that I didn't think was right. So one of the first things that I was involved with was the hospice movement here in Malta, as a founder member with my husband, and then moved on to seeing that there was a need for women with breast cancer to have a greater input of care and support. So my involvement has always been from hospice, always taking breast cancer under the umbrella of hospice, and then following it up with helping to set up the breast care support group, which is a group which is very active as well, and then moving on to a more of a lobbying group, which is the Action for Breast Cancer Foundation. And in between that, I was diagnosed myself with breast cancer, and that was 6 years ago, my initial diagnosis. I then waited a couple of years before I did any more work on breast cancer, because I believed that I needed some time to adjust to my own situation. Unfortunately, I've had recurrence of the cancer, and I'm very happy to say that with the chemotherapy I took about 6 months ago, I finished my treatment, that at the moment I'm in remission, and therefore I'm able to get back to work and doing some further promotion to give women encouragement that there is life after breast cancer.
What is the psychological impact of such a condition? Because, I mean, in every obviously, cancer, first of all, cancer in itself, cancer per se, carries with it a bit of a taboo as well. People do not use the word.
No.
And I think that doesn't always help when then obviously people are faced with the same issue. But apart from that, what is the psychological challenge when you have when the breast is one of the features that socially has been constructed around women as being the feature,
yes,
or one of the features, yes, of a woman. So how would a woman experience go through such an experience?
Yeah, I think you know, one of the areas that we don't really talk about is sexuality and, you know, body image, altered body image, and how it can affect not just the woman herself but her partner. Mm. It can have very serious effects on relationships, you know, because not every partner is ready to cope with, you know, their woman having such altered body image. But the good thing is that nowadays breast surgery, and Gordon, you can talk about this as well, reconstructive surgery, and, you know, breast surgery now is not always as drastic. It's not, you know, I mean, we do conserve the breast. It's not necessary that every woman will have a mastectomy. Mm. I mean, I did have a mastectomy, and actually I have now had a reconstruction, but just a very simple one. I just had an internal prosthesis fitted. So I'm very happy with what I have. It's not, you know, I knew it's not going to, never going to be the same, but I feel good with my body image now. I feel better than I did before I did the implant. Mm. But it's a very personal thing. Some women say, no, I don't want to touch, I don't want to do anything else. But there is the choice, and it's something that's discussed when women, you know, initially go for their...
Are people counselled, or the couple counselled into this?
Yes, I think Gordon dynamics can tell us a bit more about that from the breast clinic, what happens with the breast care nurses.
I was very pleased to hear what Helen just said, because we're trying now very much to treat people with breast cancer very differently how we used to treat them before. Mm. In the past, these patients didn't do very well, and they tended to get very major surgery, mastectomy, which we still do, but much less than it used to be done before. And the whole focus was to save this patient's life. Mm. Now, there has been a very big change, and the disease is no longer one where the patient doesn't live very long, but it can become a sort of chronic condition, very much like diabetes. You keep it in control, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, you live your life, and, you know, you need some treatment and this and that, but it has changed from something which is very acute and aggressive to something which the patient will live with for many years,
yes,
keeping it under control. Mm. So now, whilst we still focus on doing an operation which is what we call an oncological operation, which means a cancer operation where you want to remove the disease, we also focus on preserving the appearance. Mm. And we do a new technique which is called oncoplastic surgery, where we combine the aim of removing the tumor with a plastic surgery approach. So we use flaps and implants, and the idea is to preserve the breast, mm-hmm, to make it hopefully look as good as it was before, and in some cases even better, because
yes,
we can do plastic surgery on the other side and make them smaller, make them bigger, mm-hmm, whatever is, mm-hmm, necessary.
And it's paid for by the state, so it isn't considered as...
Yes, plastic surgery for the breast, that is done for patients who have a tumor, have the right to have
probably
it
done. It's the only
cosmetic
surgery, yes, that is probably, yes, funded by the state. I would,
yes, yeah, there are different criteria, but yes, we are working very hard to do this, and we also try to do it to do it in the first operation, so that if possible to get it looking good at the first operation, so that they won't need to have a second procedure later,
yes,
on.
But plus every the trauma case, as well of trauma, going through, you know, especially if it is a mastectomy, going through the mastectomy, and then the thought of going back to do surgery. It's both things. The effect of seeing your altered body image, which it is very dramatic, you know. I mean, it is hard for women to look at themselves after they've had such a procedure. So if, you know, as Gordon's saying, if it can all be done in one go, you know, the trauma, I think, even the psychological, it's going to
give them
a better healing. It's going to give them a better, you know, outlook, a more positive outlook, I think.
So that is the mindset of the way we do surgery. We are aiming to treat the disease properly and then at the same time making the breast look good. But also, besides the operation itself, it's very important to deal with these ladies in a way that you give them hope and you explain exactly what's going on. I think perhaps in the remote past, people were not told very much and they didn't really know what was going on and they were worried and scared and what's going to happen next. Now we have a system where we have breast care nurses. Helen was the first breast care nurse in Malta, where these nurses are specifically trained and have a lot of experience in dealing with these
breast
ladies.
Breast care nurses. Okay.
And we have a team of very good ones who work very
specialized
hard.
Specialized nurses. In breast care.
They are a link and they can discuss with patients and they talk about things which perhaps the surgeon always doesn't talk about so well, because they can talk about prosthesis, all sorts of things, and they can guide and help and support.
They're a huge support to women going through the system, because they are the constant, because, you know, the patient will have a named breast care nurse, and that breast care nurse will tell them if you need anything, if you want to ask any questions.
So they will remain the sort of mentor, the point of reference.
Yes, which is, you know, the continuity of care is so important, but to have a link person that, you know, we very often are afraid to start asking questions, and then we go home from the hospital and say, oh, I didn't ask that. Now, I'm not suggesting that we then start phoning these girls all the time, but I mean, you know that you can phone them and, you know, ask them something and they will help you to find out the answer. Mm. If they don't know, they'll find it out, but they are trained in this area of care.
I found it very interesting, Andrew, that you mentioned the word taboo, because this is something that I face all the time. I like to think of another disease where there was a big taboo. In times of the Second World War, there was a lot of TB in Malta. There was a lot of malnutrition, and people were all huddled together because they moved out of the places which were being bombed. And there was, if you got TB, which was not treatable at the time, there was a big taboo. It was as though it was a dirty disease. In fact, one of the hospitals for TB was called the Connaught Hospital, which is now the Natural Museum, the Museum for Natural History in Mdina, when you go in on the right. That was a hospital for TB patients. And I know of people who have told me they used to walk past and look the other way. The taboo was so strong. Mm-hmm. Now, we wouldn't even dream of a taboo for TB, because it's, first of all, it's not very common. And it's so easily treated with a course of medicines. And unfortunately, cancer still has the taboo, but I hope it will go the way that TB has gone and taboo will melt away. When I meet patients, I tell them straight away that they have a cancer. But I explain to them that the word is not important. Yeah. The term that we use for a disease is not important. And if you use a word which is ugly, it doesn't mean the disease something which we should,
because the idea was that cancer, probably, this is very interesting, the etymology of the word, because the probability is that the concept around TB being looked at in a particular way is because of its fatality.
Yes.
And probably there may be a connection to that, because we used to think that cancer is
exactly
a fatality, whilst
the true reality is not that any longer. So what I like to do is to explain to patients when I first give them the news. But then, whilst I have to use the word, because I don't believe that people shouldn't be informed of what is wrong with them, then I have to explain what it means. And when they understand what it means and how it can be treated and all this, then somehow that taboo is not so important. Of course, they always get a shock and it takes time to get over with. I can't pretend that it's easy. Mm-hmm. But I think we have to think of it in a different
way. But you've got over that hurdle, I mean, of actually using the word and then explaining and then... And somehow it clarifies the whole thing, because if you're not open straight away, then it's much more difficult to move forward. And after all, you know, when I had come for my checkup, it's one of the things that you said to me, Gordon, as you've mentioned now. It's like diabetes, you know, it's something that you can keep under control, and that you know, I think that whenever I start worrying about myself, say I have an ache or a pain, I think, oh, I don't know, what's this? Yes. It helps you to keep things in perspective, because otherwise you will live a miserable life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's one thing for sure. We all are going to die eventually, but you can't keep dwelling on that. You have to enjoy life as it is. And the quality of life for women that have got this as a metastatic disease, as where it has spread, is definitely much, much better now than it was even 10 years ago. I mean, there are so many changes. And so this is the reassurance, and where, as you say, I really hope the taboo will, you know, lessen.
I'm particularly interested on a side note that whilst it's really important to have competent doctors and paramedics and nurses and people with whom you get in touch, I'm particularly engaged with the idea that people who have gone through this experience are there for these women.
Yes,
because it's a condition which affects women.
Yes,
in particular. And I think it is extremely generous of the people involved, because probably if I was in that particular condition, I would opt to work with children, for example.
Yes.
But to go back...
Yes, it is hard sometimes. I agree with you.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when I may be relating my experience, you know, you're reliving the what you've passed through. And that's why I said, you know, it took me 2 years. Even though I'm experienced, and you know, I have the great support of my husband, who is a psychiatrist, so I had the psychological support I needed. I knew that it was absolutely not right for me in the first 2 years following my treatment, my initial surgery and everything. It was not right for me to be working with other women that were being diagnosed. It took me that time to adjust and then to be able to cope with helping others again. But it is a challenge, but it's also very rewarding, because a lot of positive things are happening, and, you know, that really motivates us to work more.
And drawing from this concept as well, it's also very interesting to see that the medical profession realizing, appreciating the importance of having people who have gone through this experience to be part of the team.
Yes.
And I don't think that is completely, you know, it's not common for you know, for every professional and in every area of medicine. So I think that is another very important element that
but
factors
Helen has
into
been,
this debate.
Been active in this field for far longer than she was affected herself, because she set up many of the groups, and they have been having a yearly meeting too, and they have increased awareness, programs like this and many other things, lobbying, we can't do it on our own, and NGOs who do this work are a great help to the service we provide.
In fact, you have the breast care support group. There are members of that group that are actively involved in the outpatients, in the surgical outpatients, working with the team over there. Again, being led by professionals, everyone knows their limits and what they can and can't do. And, you know, there are clearly defined areas where, you know, they can be involved, and maybe other areas where they have to leave it to the healthcare professionals.
I know this is a bit of a question which sounds a bit like a cliche, and maybe and probably has no answer to it. But how come we've found solutions to so many conditions? Because there is part of the reality is that cancer can have its fatalities as well. Whilst the amount, let's face the music.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very good proportion, from what you're telling me, of people who are treated. It's a condition which is extremely treatable, etc., etc. But there are fatalities. How come we haven't found a solution for cancer across the board? What makes it so complex, so difficult to sort out completely?
I think the first thing we have to mention is that each cancer is different. So a cancer of the breast is, even though it's also cause a cancer, it's very different to a leukemia or to a cancer of the lung. So certain cancers behave in
there's
different
no relation.
Way, even though we use the same word and they have the same problems that they can either grow locally or spread to other parts of the body. They are treated in very different ways. Mm. For example, lung cancer, unfortunately, is still very difficult to treat. And we can't always cure everything in medicine. In fact, people are dying just as they used to before, as Helen said. But what we are doing is prolonging the time. So if in certain cancers are now curable more than others, and breast is one of those that are towards the top which are curable. It's an aggressive disease, and medicine has not reached a stage yet where every cancer can be cured. I hope that perhaps in the future, my children's time, maybe that will happen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you compare what we have today to what there was in my parents' time, it's a completely different thing. You know, the survival after many things like heart attacks and strokes. And it's always improving. But in medicine and in science in general, you sometimes get a big breakthrough. But most often there are incremental improvements. Slow 5% here, 10% there, another 5%, 10%. And that is happening in breast cancer. There were big breakthroughs. One of them is, for example, tamoxifen, which is a medicine which is freely used for many cancers, for which it will work. And this works by blocking the effect of hormones on the breast cancer, and that improved survival by 10%. Since then, there have been new chemotherapies. Now, recently, in the last few years, there's a new type of drugs, which most people have heard of, Herceptin, because this there was a big campaign to get this provided free by the state. And these are intelligent drugs which are working specifically on breast cancer cells. There is work on the vaccine. So there are always incremental improvements. Mm.
Can we say that, I don't want to go into the political issue, but I do understand that there's a financial limitation that the country has, but can people need particular medicines, and because of the cost, they're not given those medicines? Does that scenario exist?
We have to put it into the context of other countries. If you compare our health service to that of the greatest country in the world, the United States of America, in America there are people who have to sell the house to pay for treatment. Mm. And people who die on the street because they've sold the house, they don't have any money and they can't afford the treatment. I'm very proud that our health service provides a very high standard of care. It's not perfect and it can always be improved. I think if you compare to many other countries, I am president of the Commonwealth Medical Association, and I see countries where not only don't they have healthcare, but they don't have water, they don't have food. They don't. So you have to see that the standard of our healthcare has to be within the economic situation. Now, I can say that in breast, most of the treatment that is needed is available for free. Mm. And there are not many countries, of course the very developed countries can provide that, but not all of them.
And this, so treatment you're saying, chemotherapy
example,
and...
For example, Herceptin, which is...
what are we talking about here in terms
Herceptin,
of money?
I'm not sure, but I think it's in the tens of thousands of euros a year.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it's 10 or 20, it's in that range.
Talking,
and a lady that needs that medicine, because not every breast cancer patient will benefit from that treatment. It will only benefit certain patients. So it's not given to everyone, and people mustn't think that if they don't get it, they're going to deny the right treatment, because the treatment has its side effects and should always be chosen for. I like to use the word that the treatment is tailored for each patient. Mm. In Maltese, perhaps it's even a bit better because you use the word infassal. Mm. And that, I think people understand, that's like buying a dress. I can't wear the same clothes that Andrew or Helen would wear because we have different size of our body, has shape is different. So each patient has to have a treatment which is specific, tailored for her. Mm-hmm. And so I could see four patients after each other in the clinic this afternoon, and they will each be receiving different treatment even though they all have breast cancer.
Okay.
So this is another advance where wise before, they would all get a mastectomy and then some would get a bit of chemotherapy. Now each patient is discussed. Perhaps I could talk about this because I'm very proud that over the last 11 years we have what we call a multidisciplinary group, which means that once a week, we used to meet every 2 weeks, but now we're so busy we have to meet once a week. And this is a group where there are about 40 of us, and this is the surgeons involved in breast cancer. We have the pathologists, the oncologists, the radiotherapists. I have to be careful not to leave someone out. The radiologists, the breast care nurses, the physiotherapists, sometimes the geneticists and the plastic surgeons. And in an anonymous way...
So all of you meet once a week?
We meet once a week, and in an anonymous way, we don't actually mention the name of the patient. We discuss each patient, we see the x-rays on the screen, pathologist shows us the enlarged views of them. And then we discuss and we come out with a plan. So sometimes...
Without the plastic surgeon feeling threatened, without the oncologist feeling,
I think we all get on very well and we learn from each other and we discuss. And sometimes... You know, I have an idea, someone else has another idea, we discuss it, and then we come out with a consensus. We also have the breast screening team coming there, because breast screening are sending invitations to women at home who don't have any problem, and they ask to come for a mammogram. And then when something is found on a mammogram, they present these patients to us, and we discuss them at the same meeting, and then the care is transferred to my team, and then we see the patient and start the treatment.
Which is incredible. What's your take on what the country is doing, Helen?
Well,
I mean, even within the perspective of your involvement with a number of NGOs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I would say that now we've really moved forward in cancer care in general, and obviously there's going to be the new unit at Mater Dei. I think that is
an important development.
I think it is a very important development. I hope that there will be room within that department for the breast team to be able to have at least a small section over there where they can seeing patients, because at the moment the only place where the breast team work for the breast clinic is in a busy surgical unit, which is not the ideal setting. So our foundation, one of the things that we are going to be lobbying for now is to actually ensure that there is some space within that new unit, and I really believe it has to be given serious consideration. So we're always pushing for new things. We, as Gordon said, Herceptin was one of the things we asked that would be given free. Now, again, as Gordon said, it's not for all women. Maybe 40 women a year might, at the most, I think, need Herceptin, if that. Plus, you know, not all of those will be able to take it because of some of the side effects. But at least now there is that chance that women, because we did have women that were mortgaging their house to pay for the treatment. Why we did have that, yes.
Because that came out in the media.
Yes.
So nonetheless, the Multi-Community Chest Fund does help when the list of medications...
Yes, they do.
A medication is not included in the list of medications in the register, what you call it.
Yes, they did help with the Herceptin as well.
And they help with a number of... And even other chemotherapies.
Yes, so they do.
I don't think they pay the whole package, but they pay a good chunk of that.
They do help a lot. So. As far as cancer in general goes, so we know we've got a national cancer plan, which has been launched now.
What is this National Cancer Plan?
Well, that's something that I think you have to ask
the politicians.
Dr. Miriam Dalmas. She is in charge of that and has spent a lot of years working on it. So that's something very positive. It's something required by the EU, and now we have it in place. Not all countries managed to get round to doing that, so we've done a good job there. And I think that there's always room for improvement, and as a foundation we're looking at the areas that still need to be a bit more tweaked, a bit more fine-tuned. But on the whole, I think that there have been great improvements, and we're very happy about that.
We talked before starting the show, we talked about the difference between early detection and prevention. Can you tell us a bit about that when it comes to breast cancer?
I think it's important to make this distinction. Prevention is doing something, whatever it is, that will work so that you won't get the disease. I can mention my favorite bugbear, which is smoking. If you don't smoke, you're going to prevent a whole enormous amount of diseases, like heart disease, lung cancers, and I think in this series of programs you might want to emphasize that if there's one single thing you can do to live a longer life, it is to stop smoking.
Yeah.
And
in fact, next week's program is about I'll be having people from health promotion, and probably they'll be raising this issue.
Absolutely. I mean, this is an extremely important thing. Another important thing is healthy eating and physical activity, because this Malta, we have a high obesity rate, and definitely there's a lot of disease which is made much more common by being overweight. And I know there's a lot of work being done on educating people on to eat the right food. Unfortunately, the bad food tastes better and it's easier to cook. and it takes a bit of effort to eat healthily, but then it's worth living longer too.
Yes.
So,
and it's amazing how much better you feel when you eat a more balanced diet. I mean, I've made quite a lot of changes to my diet since the recurrence of my cancer, and I feel so much better for it. And again, exercise, it is proven through research that we need exercise,
you don't need to kill yourself at the gym.
But regular exercise, a good brisk walk, two or three times a week. And, I mean it by a brisk walk, not just sort of sauntering along. I mean, moving it, really, getting on with it. It's very, very healthy for you, and it is one of the things that we're being told will help to prevent not just breast cancer, but many other diseases as well.
So, as
Gordon said earlier on, it's not just for one thing. These are things that we should be doing. Again, the other thing about breast cancer that keeps cropping up is alcohol consumption. Related to breast cancer, so cutting down on the alcohol or not having any alcohol at all. I mean, I've spent quite a long time not even having anything alcoholic. I would say that now I would have an occasional glass
of wine,
but I'm much more careful now about, I might have had a glass of wine with my meal most days. Now, during the week for sure I won't, and maybe even at the weekends I won't bother. But so that's another issue which is mentioned frequently. Another area which I have to mention, because it's something that the foundation is looking into very much because we're a member of the Health Environment Alliance, is environmental issues and chemicals. And there are a lot of chemicals around in everyday life that are called hormone disrupting chemicals. Now, there's still a lot of research going on into this, but these chemicals can affect the hormonal balance of young people especially, and then affect them in later life. It's something that cancer and these hormone disruptors, especially breast cancer, because it's very often hormonally related, are things to consider. So using lots of detergents and things that are full of, even fragrance, for example, the scent that they put in, that is carcinogenic. So, if we can open a window to freshen up a room, it's better to do that than to start spraying loads of stuff around, which our children are breathing in, and we are breathing in, and that may actually, have some negative effects on us. Mm. There are lots of things like that. Now, if anyone wants to know more about it, they can go onto the Health Environment Alliance HEAL website and they can find out about hormone disrupting chemicals. But that is something that even in our latest newsletter, we've got an article about chemical cocktails and the risks that they can, have for this?
Going back to prevention, in breast cancer specifically now, there are certain risk factors which are known to increase the risk of breast cancer, but many of them you can't do anything about, like being a lady or being of a certain age when cancer becomes more often. So really, besides these general things which we're talking about, there's not very, very much else, except something which I'll mention later. But then, early detection is different. Early detection means finding the disease at an early stage. And the reason, the benefits of this are that the treatment is going to be simpler and it will be more effective. And this is where the breast screening program comes in. Quite recently, it's about almost a year and a half now, the government introduced a national breast screening program where women at home of a certain age receive an invitation to go for a mammogram. So these ladies don't have any symptoms. This is something new for our health system. Though it is similar to screening for cervix with pap smears, but this is not a program yet, and the government is going down this way to introduce these screening programs to try and pick up as many of these cancers which should have occurred anyway, pick them up early.
But isn't this a bit of a contradiction? So the screening program, they encourage women of a certain age to do it, but you're saying that early detection is important. But early detection can be even for women who are younger.
Yes. But then, first of all, economics come into it, because in the younger age group, there are going to be less women with breast cancer, so it will be less cost-effective to screen, because there is a cost to screening, not only money, also resources. You need radiologists to see these x-rays, you need machines. There's another reason, though, which is not economic, is that in the younger age group, a mammogram is less effective. Because basically a mammogram is an x-ray which throws radiation at a breast. And when there is something which is denser, harder, it will show up. Now, in a young lady with dense breasts, it is not as useful a test as it is in an older lady. So screening, for example, in 30-year-old, for example, to be a bit of a ridiculous idea almost this, because first of all, you're not going to find many who have breast cancer at 30 years. And you'll be giving them radiation, which in itself is harmful. And if they do have a cancer, it might not even show up on a mammogram at that age. So the government started with the 50 to 60-year age group as a pilot to get it going. They may then decide to extend the age group once it gets going. And we get patients who either have a screen mammogram in this unit, many still have them done privately, and then they are referred to us when the tumour is not even, you can't even feel it, it'll be very small. And then we use special techniques to find this tumour, and they have a smaller operation, and many of them won't need more complicated treatment like chemotherapy. I mentioned another form of prevention earlier on, because this is a bit of a big thing to talk about, but sometimes breast cancer can be inherited in the sense that there is a genetic problem, and we sometimes get ladies who have young sisters or the mother or aunts who have got breast cancer at a young age, perhaps at around 40. And these can be investigated and can check their genes to see whether they have an abnormality in the genes, which makes them have a higher risk of getting breast cancer. And sometimes we're faced with ladies who have an 80 or 90% chance of getting breast cancer. And we counsel these ladies and explain to them that in some cases it is worth doing an operation to remove the breasts before they get diseased. Of course, this is a plastic surgery approach where they have implants put in instead of the breast. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not advocating this for everyone in Malta. I'm not suggesting that everyone should go and remove the breast and have an implant. I'm just saying that in a small group, very small group, maybe 10 or 20 families in Malta, who have this genetic abnormality, we can offer them this operation to prevent them getting the disease. And that is pure prevention.
And they keep, really, the external appearance, because the breast is still there. It's basically shelling out all the breast tissue, if I'm not mistaken, and then putting prosthesis inside. And so they, they're not actually having a mastectomy. You know, it for women that, you know it's probably going to come, to them that's going to happen to them. There are women that have done this procedure.
I was going to ask.
Yes.
Did we have one who...
Yes.
I would hazard a guess of maybe 10 in Malta, mm-hmm. or 20, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know the exact figures, but
huge thing to go through, but you know, then they have removed the risks. Have they removed 100%?
No, they remove by 95% the risk. So we call this a risk reduction surgery.
Well, 95% is quite significant.
Of course, 95% is a very... And the reason it's 95% is that the breast tissue isn't an organ which has very clear boundaries. The breast glands tend to be present also in the fat under the skin. Some of them are under the arm. So it's impossible to remove every single breast cell. But removing 95% is as close as you can get to removing
the... And is this surgery actually, would it be covered by the health
department? It would be covered, but I think what we do is, when we get patients who do have a strong family history, I first counsel them about the operation, because I think they should be prepared to have the operation if they have the problem.
Yes.
Before they know that they have the problem, because if we do the genetic testing and find that they have a risk of breast cancer and they're not prepared to do anything about it, I think perhaps it's better not to test it at all.
Yes, yeah? Yes.
Well, the last question, very quickly, unfortunately, time has paused extremely quickly. What's the next step when it comes to Action for Breast Cancer Foundation and to other organizations that you're involved in? What are you after?
We're after, we would love to see the breast clinic develop into a full breast unit, which, you know, would involve, I think, better facilities than are currently available. I think that for such a huge amount of work that this team are doing, they are working so hard, and it is because they really want to develop the service and improve it that we've seen such huge leaps and bounds in the care for women with breast cancer. So we as a foundation, that's one of the things that we will really support to happen. We really wish, we know the needs. Because we go through the system, we know the needs. So that would be something we consider important. And improving the overall health of women, keeping women on their toes about taking care of themselves. Those are the two main issues.
Well, thank you very much. May I call Ms. Halim Muscat, Leah Chairperson, tal ABCF, tal Action for Breast Cancer Foundation. Kelli u koll Mr. Karwana Dingli li huwa surgeon u il-kap tal-breast clinic ġewwa l-Isptar Mater Dei. Jiena nirringrazzjakom ħafna, nirringrazzjakom li segwejtuna pallun 20 il-programm saħħa jogħġbkom magħkom. Semmilkom.